You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Mission of the Folk Souls. This is Lecture 4, given on the 10th of June, 1910. If we wish to arrive at the relation of the human races to one another, and at the foundations from which the several peoples spring, we must take into consideration that man, such as we know him, is in reality a very complicated being, and that only by the cooperative activity of many, many of the beings in the universe could his present form and being come about. We know from the study of Akashic records and other observations on the evolution of man that formerly our earth itself, before it attained its present condition, had to go through three other conditions, in the course of which the three so-called parts of man, the physical body, the etheric or life body, and the astral body, were gradually established and brought to their present state. Only during the present incarnation of the earth has man become capable of taking into himself an I. These four parts of his being show us all that has happened during the three or four incarnations of our earth, through its incarnation as Saturn, Sun, Moon, and through our earth period itself, insofar as that has run its course hitherto. If you will bring before your mind all the beings who have thus worked together, the spirits of will or thrones, the spirits of wisdom, of motion, of form, of personality, the archangels, down to the angels, and above the spirits of will or thrones, the cherubim and seraphim, you will admit that only from a very complicated work could that come about which makes man's present organization possible. We have seen that it was not only necessary for so large a number of beings and forces of nature to work together in the cosmos, but that it was also necessary, if man were to come into being, that at certain epochs, certain beings should renounce the normal course of their evolution and remain behind, in order to affect the organization of man in a way that would have been impossible in the normal course of his evolution. Therefore, if we want to understand man, such as he appears before our eyes today, we must look at a wonderful tissue woven out of many and various forms. It must be quite clear to us that only when we, in a sense, draw this tissue apart and observe the activity of the several beings, do we learn to understand how through the cooperation of these beings man has come into being. We are then able to say that the chief being who comes into consideration for the present-day man is the one who has given him the possibility of saying I to himself, of gradually coming to the consciousness of the I. And we know that this possibility was first given by the spirits of form, those beings whom we call powers, exousiae. If we listen to the activity of these particular beings, which they direct to man, and ask ourselves what would happen to him if these beings alone, and of these only those who are in normal evolution, were chiefly to be active in him, we should find that these are the donors of the I organization. If we consider them according to their own nature, we find that their chief interest lies in bringing to man his I, capital. But now, what these beings have really to accomplish in man only actually comes about in the life of present-day man at a certain age. It can only appear at a certain age. If you remember what has been said about the education of the child from the standpoint of spiritual science, you will admit that man, in the period between his physical birth and the changing of the teeth, that is, up to his 7th year, principally develops his physical body. These spirits of form have no particular interest in the development of this physical body, for this is, on the whole, a repetition of what happened to man on the old Saturn, and which has already often been repeated, and which, after the last physical birth, and up to the seventh year, has for the present been repeated up to last time in a particular way. Then comes the time from the seventh to the 14th year, that is, up to puberty. That, too, is a stage in which the spirits of form take no particular interest, for that is a repetition of the old sun period, and the spirits of form wished to set to work with their chief activity, that of bestowing the eye, only during the condition of the earth life. We then come to the third age, which runs its course between the 15th and 21st or 22nd year. During this time, the astral body, which normally belongs to the moon evolution, evolves in man as a repetition. There, too, those spirits of form who are evolving normally still have no interest in man. So that we must say, the three ages of man which precede the actual birth of his eye, which only comes in about his 20th year, have no direct interest for the spirits of form. They only intervene, out of their own nature, one might say, somewhere about the 20th year of life. So that, if you come to think of it, you will no longer find it very strange that so far as the actual intentions of the spirits of form are concerned, man need only come into existence in the condition in which he is to be found somewhere about his 20th year. All that is developed in man before that time is in reality to those spirits of form a kind of embryonic state, a sort of germinal condition. And if I may be allowed to speak somewhat metaphorically, I might say that these spirits of form, who have developed themselves normally, would far prefer everything to go on with a certain regularity, and that no one should till then have dabbled in their handiwork. If no one interfered with these spirits of form until the 20th year, then in the first 7 years of his life, man would have had the consciousness belonging to the physical body. That, as a matter of fact, is a very dim state of consciousness, such as is possessed by the mineral world. In the second stage, in the time between his 7th and his 14th year, he would have a sleep consciousness. From his 14th to his 20th year, he would be very active inwardly, but he would live in a sort of dream consciousness. Only after this consciousness as a moon being, at about his 21st year, would man really wake up. Then only would he arrive at the eye consciousness. If he followed a normal development, he would only then come out of himself and survey the outer world in that representation of it which is the one familiar to us. So you see that in reality, if we only take into consideration the activity of the spirits of form, man attains his present-day consciousness much too soon. For you know that in the man of today, this consciousness awakes to a certain degree soon after physical birth. It would not awake in the form in which it sees the physical external world clearly and distinctly, if other spirits, who in reality are spirits of motion, had not remained behind and renounced the development of certain capacities which they could have acquired up to the time of the earth evolution if they had not stood still. So that now, during the earth evolution, they might be able to intervene in a particular way in the development of man. Because they went through their evolution in a different way, they are in a position to bring to man earlier that which he would otherwise only have acquired in his 20th year or thereabouts. These, therefore, are spiritual beings who renounced the possibility of carrying on their evolution normally up to the earth evolution. Spiritual beings who might have been spirits of motion during the earth evolution, but who remained at the stage of the spirits of form and are now active as spirits of form in the earth evolution. Thus they are able, during the earth evolution to bestow upon man that which he is not as yet in the least ripe for, having still too much to retrieve from an earlier epoch. They can bestow that which in the normal form of evolution would have only been bestowed at about his 20th year. Thus man comes into existence and receives capacities from the abnormal spirits of form, which he would otherwise only receive about his 20th year. All this has very significant consequences. Just imagine for a moment that this had not occurred. If these spirits with an abnormal development were not to interfere, then man would only come into consideration, as far as the physical world is concerned, in the condition which is his at about his 20th year. That is to say, he would have to be born in this condition as a physical being, and would have to go through quite different germinal conditions. In fact, through these abnormal spirits of form, the evolution of man is transposed into the physical world already from birth on, up to the 20th year. That is, by about the first third of our earth life. We must therefore say, the first third of our earth life is not directed by the spiritual beings who rule the conditions of the earth, but by other abnormal spiritual beings. And because these take part in evolution, we therefore do not possess the form we should have if we were born in the condition we are in about our 20th year. Man must pay for this by passing the first third of his life, the time up to his 20th year, under the great influence of these abnormal beings. During the whole period of growth, man is in reality under the influence of these abnormal beings. He has to pay for this when the middle third of his life has passed away, which, on the whole, belongs only to the normal spirits of form. In that a descending course, a going back, begins, and his etheric and astral organizations crumble away. So that life is divided into three parts or portions, an ascending third, a middle third, and a descending third. Man really only becomes man during his earth life in the middle part, and in the last third he has to give back that which he received during the first or ascending third. In other words, he must repay the corresponding installment. If man had indeed been exclusively given up to the influences of the normal spirits of form, all that happens today, up to his 20th year, would have quite a different appearance, quite a different form. Everything would have happened quite differently, so that all that is connected with the present development of man in the first of his three epochs of life is on the whole a premature existence, one that forestalls much that belongs to the later epochs of life. Through this, man has become a more material being up to the second epoch of his life than he would otherwise have been. He would otherwise, up to that period of his life, have gone through purely spiritual conditions, and would have descended to the present material densification only at that period of his development, which he goes through in the 20th or 21st year of his life, when he finds himself bound to the earth. Spiritual science therefore tells us that if his development had proceeded in that way, man would really have descended to the earth only in the condition which he now reaches in his 20th or 21st year. He would not have been able to go through the preceding states upon the earth. He would have been obliged to go through them soaring above the earth, around it. And now you can understand the whole course of human development through child and youth. You can see, if we take this straight line, and there's a diagram, BC, as being the earth path, that the spirits of form would have intended man to come down only at this point, 20, 1 and 20. Man would have reached the earth only here, at B, where the 21 mark is. And he would have ascended again after his 40th year, see, and would have gone through the last third of his life in a spiritualized state. Through the abnormal beings, man was compelled to descend here, A, that's where we are right at the beginning of the line, and at once take up his life on the earth. That is the secret of our existence. If all this had become what it did not become, that is to say, if man had gone through the first and last thirds of his life up above in the periphery of the earth, and had only come down to earth during the middle part, and had therefore become quite a different being, he would not have been bound to the earth to the extent he actually is today. If that had happened, then all the persons who walked on earth would have been of the same form and nature. All the people who have wandered over the face of the earth would have had the same form. There would have been only one kind of human being. That which makes us into beings capable of manifesting the specific attributes of the various races expressed in all humanity is not comprised in the middle third of life. By means of all that appertains to the preceding age, of all that happens in the first third of life, we, with all our forces, are bound to the earth more than the normal spirits of form have intended us to be. For this reason, however, man has become more dependent on the earth upon which he lives than he would otherwise have been. He has become dependent upon that part of the earth on which he lives, and because he descends earlier to the earth, against the intentions of the spirits of form, as one might say, he becomes dependent upon that place, because he unites himself to the earth in a state which is not designed for him. If he had only set foot on the earth in the middle third of his life, he would have been independent of whether he did so in the north or the south, in the east or the west. But because he has become dependent upon the earth, because his youth is spent in the way we have described, he becomes earthbound. He becomes a being who is connected with and belongs to the country in which he was born. He thus becomes dependent upon all the conditions of the earth belonging to that place, upon the incidence of the sun's rays, upon the circumstance of whether his birthplace is in the neighborhood of the equator in the torrid zone, or in a more temperate region, upon whether he is born on low-lying land or on a high tableland. The respiration is quite different in the plain from what it is in the mountains. Man therefore becomes altogether dependent upon the earthly conditions of the place in which he is born. So we see that man has thoroughly grown together with his mother earth through being so closely connected with the place, with that part of the earth on which he is born, and that he is determined by those attributes which he thus receives by the earth forces connected with that particular place acting within him. All these things determine his racial character. And in this indirect way, the abnormal spirits of form, those spirits of form or powers who give what we call our present earthly consciousness, not between the ages of 21 to 43, but at a different time, are the originators of the racial differences in mankind over the whole earth, which, therefore, depend upon the part of the world in which a man is born. Now, during this time, which on the whole is under the rulership of the abnormal spirits of form, man also acquires the possibility and the capacity of propagating his species. This capacity is also acquired during the time in which man is not entirely under the guidance of the normal spirits of form. Hence the possibility is given that a man should not only be dependent in this way on the place where he is born, but that the attributes he thus receives may also be inherited by his successors, and that the racial characteristics are not only expressed in the influences of the dwelling place, but also in that which is inherited through the race. You have here the explanation as to why the race is that which can be inherited. And we shall understand what is shown by spiritual science, that only in the past were the racial characteristics produced by the place in which men were born. That was the case in the latter portion of the Lemurian epoch, and in the first part of the Atlantean epoch, when man was directly dependent upon his earthly surroundings. At a later epoch, race began to assume the character of being bound up with heredity and no longer with place. So that in race we see something which was originally connected with one special part of the earth and which afterward propagated itself in mankind through heredity, but became more and more independent of place. From what I have just said, you will see in which period of evolution we can reasonably speak of the idea of race. There could be no sense, according to the real meaning of the word, in speaking of race before the Lemurian epoch, for then only did man descend to the earth. Before that he was in the periphery of the earth. He then descended to the earth, and the racial characteristics were handed down by heredity in the Atlantean epoch and on into our post-Atlantean epoch. We shall see how in our own time it is the national characteristics that again split up the character of the race and begin to extinguish it. We shall see all that later. We must now take care that we do not consider the world as though evolution were only like a wheel that goes round and round without beginning or end. The idea of the revolving wheel, parenthesis, which is developed at length in many mystical views of the world, close parenthesis, brings fearful confusion into the conception of the actual evolution of mankind. If one thinks of it as if everything moves around a fixed center, and that it is divided into so and so many races, then one has really no idea that everything is in a state of evolution, and that the races are evolving too. Races have arisen, and they will someday die out and be no longer there. They do not repeat themselves forever in the same way, as Mr. Sinnett wrongly describes in his title Esoteric Buddhism. We must look for the beginning of racial characteristics, of racial peculiarities, in the old Lemurian epoch, and we must then follow their propagation down into our own times. But in doing so, we must be quite clear that when our present fifth epoch of evolution shall have been succeeded by the sixth and seventh, there will be no question of a condition which we may describe as race. But if we picture this evolution as always rolling evenly on, we have only a sort of mill wheel in our mind and are far removed from the understanding of what does really take place in the world. We see, therefore, how the evolution of races begins only in the Lemurian epoch, through the activity of the abnormal spirits of form, who let the forces of our earth planet set to work at the spot where a man has to pass the first years of his life. And that again is carried over in a certain way into his later life, because man has a memory, through which he remembers, even in his later life, the time spent in a really abnormal way on the earth before his 21st year. Man would be a very different being if only the normal spirits of form were active. Through the abnormal spirits of form, he is dependent upon the spot on which he lives. In the manner just described, a deviation from the laws of the normal spirits of form came about, so that the place in which a man lives on earth during a certain incarnation became of significance to him. We shall more clearly understand these connections if we consider the following. We may state in a certain way how the subsoil, the ground, radiates its essence upward and permeates the human organization, so that man becomes dependent upon the soil of that part of the earth. In this connection we may therefore mention certain parts of the earth that are connected with the historical development of the human being. We shall go into these conditions more minutely later on. I shall now characterize them in the abstract. And there's a horseshoe going to the left, and at the beginning of the horseshoe on the top it says Europe. Then you go around to the right, halfway down is a dot, it says Asia. You continue down, now you're going to the left, and you hit the end of the dot, and you have Africa. Sorry if that picture is poorly described. Continuing the reading. You have here, for instance, a point which lies in Africa. At this spot, there radiate out from the earth, as it were, all those forces which could affect man particularly during his early childhood. Later on, their influence grows less. Hence, a man is less under the influence of these forces, but they, nevertheless, impress him very strongly with what comes from them. That spot on the earth on which a man lives affects him most strongly in his earliest childhood. It determines his whole life. A man is so entirely dependent upon these forces that this spot imprints the characteristic of his early childhood permanently upon him. That is more or less a characteristic of all those who, as regards their racial character, receive the determining forces out of the earth in the neighborhood of that spot. What we call the black race is particularly determined by these attributes. If you now pass on further into Asia, you find a spot on the earth's surface where the characteristics of youth are imprinted permanently on man from the forces of the earth, where the special attributes of later youth are conveyed to man out of the being of the earth and give him the racial character. The races which come into consideration here are the yellow and the brownish races of our epoch. If we then go further from east to west, we find, toward Europe, a point which permanently imprints the latest characteristics upon man, those which belong to the years following early youth. It is the point where man is affected by the earth forces, not already in childhood, but later, when he passes from youth to later age. Man is, in this way, seized by the forces which, coming out of the earth, determine him, so that if we picture these several points, we get a remarkable line. This line still holds good for our epoch. The spot in Africa corresponds to those forces of the earth which imprint upon man the characteristics of early childhood. The spot in Asia corresponds to those which give man the characteristics of youth, and the ripest characteristics are imprinted on man by the corresponding spot in Europe. This is simply a law. As all persons in their different incarnations pass through the various races, therefore, although it may be argued that the European has the advantage over the black and the yellow races, we should not be prejudiced thereby. Here the truth may indeed be sometimes veiled. But you see that with the help of spiritual science, we really do come upon remarkable truths. If we continue this line, we come far to the west, to America, the region where those forces are active which lie on the other side of the middle third of life. We come, I beg you not to misunderstand what is now being said, it only refers to man in so far as he is dependent upon the physical organizing forces, not upon those forces which constitute his essence as a human being, but the forces in which he lives. We come then to those forces which have a great deal to do with the decline and death of man, with what in man belongs to the last third of his life. This line, which is laid down by law, really does exist. It is a reality, a real curve, and it expresses the law according to which our earth acts upon man. The forces which determine man with respect to race take this course. The American Indians did not die out because it pleased the Europeans that they should do so, but because they had to acquire those forces which lead them to die out. Upon the peculiarity of this line depends that which takes place with the races on the surface of our earth, and that which is brought about by the forces which are not under the influence of the normal spirits of form. Where racial character comes into consideration, they work in this way. But in our age, the racial character is gradually being overcome. This was preparatorily developed even in the very earliest period. If we were to go back into the old Lemurian epoch, we could find the very first starting points of racial development in the regions of present-day Africa and Asia. Then, later, we see a movement westward. And if we follow the forces which determine race in the West, we can observe the decline among the American Indians. Humanity had to go to the West in order to die as race. To refresh humanity with the new youthful force, the migration to the East takes place, which, coming from Atlantis, moves across Europe to Asia. Then a repetition of the migration to the West takes place. But the repetition is not now the movement of races. It is a higher stage of racial development, as it were, the development of the various civilizations. We can see that in a certain way the evolution of civilizations assumes the character shown by a continuation of the race line. For instance, we have that civilization which we have characterized with sufficient admiration already in these lectures, the old Indian civilization, which appeared as the first post-Atlantean civilization. This we have to describe as corresponding to early childhood, in which man, as regards his appreciation of physical nature, still sleeps, whilst the manifestations of a spiritual world work into his soul. The first Indian civilization is in fact a revelation from above, a manifestation from spiritual heights. And it was only able to work into man because he came under the influence of Indian earth, under which he had already been in times lying very far back. In the primeval past, the physical race character was determined out of the earth. Now, when they were again present on the same part of the earth, a quality of the soul, namely that of the old Indians, is determined. Through the migration from the West to the East, that youthful freshness came in, which made possible the unique configuration of mind which characterizes the original Indian civilization. You will see that a very ancient Indian civilization, which has not yet been examined, and of which the Indian civilization now known to science is only a successor, can in this way be explained, namely, that in a certain respect, the Atlantean civilization is repeated in the primeval Indian civilization. Then, when we consider the civilizations which follow consecutively in the post-Atlantean epoch, we can see that they represent successive repetitions of conditions gone through earlier in the physical body, but which, through rejuvenation, have become quite different. Thus, in the Persian civilization, we see one which is in a certain way connected with what we might call a wrestling through of the human being who lives chiefly in the first force of human life, when, with the forces which originate from the normal spirits of form, he is still under the influences of the abnormal spirits of form. This opposition is contained in the Persian civilization, in the consciousness and in the form of light and darkness, of Ormuzd and Ahriman. The further we come over toward the West, the more do we see how the attributes of a riper age of civilization are imprinted, even although we must admit that up to our present time the creations of man are still to a great extent dependent upon the abnormal forces and beings of the universe. We shall nevertheless find it comprehensible when it is said that men no longer proceed toward the West exclusively with attributes of the race. And we can also understand that in a certain way the tendency of civilization is such that the full freshness of its youth, of its productive element, declines more and more the further it goes toward the West. One who observes objectively may see from many things that the civilization in our own age is also determined in this way by a fixed law. but people are not inclined to look at things objectively. If you consider what presents itself, if you consider that in reality all civilization flows onward, you will then see that the further we go toward the West, so much the less productive does the civilization become, and as civilization it approaches its end. The further west one goes, the more do the merely external parts of civilization bloom, those which do not experience a revival by means of the youth forces, but which in a way live on into what belongs to old age. Hence, in the West, they will still be able to accomplish much for humanity in respect to physical, chemical, and astronomical discoveries. And all that does not depend upon the reviving youth forces. But that which calls for productive force really requires a different configuration of those forces which act upon man. Let us suppose a man grows up from his childhood to a certain stage. Then only does his spiritual part really blossom forth. At first he is only a being who grows physically. That which in the small boy is compressed into a narrow space must first expand physically. Afterward, his development is pressed into his inner being. And thus it is, too, with mankind in general. We are looking at a remarkable law when we follow this curve. We find it expressed even in the continents. We see that in the first place, there is a sort of original beginning of the physical development of man in Africa, that then the ground upon which humanity develops is very widely extended. We find this again in the widely extended continent of Asia. Man there inhabits huge surfaces of the earth. Now let us glance at the repetition of the race development in the post-Atlantean civilizations. Just as a man in his youth looks round him, curious as to his surroundings, so does the man of the old Indian civilization look out into the world. That is really connected with the fresh youthful forces which expand man and organize his growth in size. Then the spiritual must begin, and the physical must be compressed. Thus we see that as civilization advances into Europe, it is remarkable that the space upon which mankind is spread out is compressed into smaller dimensions. We observe that Europe is the smallest continent, and that the further it goes toward the West, the more does it strive toward compression. It extends into the sea and peninsulas, and contracts more and more toward the West. All this is connected with the spiritual course of evolution. Here you are looking in an unique manner into the mysteries of spiritual evolution. But with the compression toward the West, there is a crisis. It is a crisis through which a more unproductive element begins to act. Productivity dies out in a certain way in the peninsulas to the West. This unproductivity is revealed in what has already been described, namely that civilization itself, the further it goes toward the West, assumes a rigid, senile element. This was always known in the mystery schools. You will understand now why I said that what I had to communicate might be rather dangerous, because people might become indignant. There is a great deal more that may not yet be told, that would help to make man independent with regard to the higher parts of his being, in order that he may perceive what comes up out of the earth and determines the race, and later on determines the character of the civilization, and which, at a yet later age, when man returns again to the spiritual, will again become of no importance. Hence you will understand that with this whole process of the evolution of mankind, there is connected the spiritual evolution which has always been known to those who were initiated more deeply into the secrets of existence. The correctness of what has just been said does not depend upon whether one person likes it and another dislikes it. It depends upon the necessity which exists in evolution. If a person were to speak against necessity, he would arrive at nothing. For to speak against it means to put hindrances in the way. Therefore, it is only natural that in a certain way, the people who go to the country which lies more to the west must again obtain refreshment from the East. They must receive an impulse from the East. But the Central European domain must call to mind its own productivity, such as existed before the formation of peninsulas. That is the reason why precisely in Europe, I mean in the part embracing our two countries, Scandinavia and Germany, man is compelled to reflect upon his own soul nature, and why, on the other hand, we must look precisely in the West for that portion of humanity which is to receive something from the East, that is deeply rooted in the whole character of earthly humanity. You see this repeated even in the development of theosophy. We also meet with it again in the fourth post-Atlantean civilization among the Romans and the Greeks. It is a fact that the Romans are, in certain respects, more advanced than the Greeks, but they take their spiritual life from the people they conquered, who lived more toward the East. The law thus revealed verifies itself more and more the further the countries lie to the West. These great truths can only be indicated. They give us that which is in conformity with the inner character of our mission in every part of the surface of the earth. You see that we must understand what it is we have to do in order to raise ourselves above the general character of humanity. There lies the great responsibility which one takes if one wishes to intervene in the great movement of mankind. Where the great movement of humanity is concerned, no personal sympathy and no personal enthusiasm must play a part, for that does not come into consideration, but only what is made necessary by the great laws of humanity. We must recognize this from the great laws themselves, and not allow ourselves to be influenced by prejudice in favor of this or the other. That is, on the whole, the fundamental character of Rosicrucianism. Rosicrucianism means acting in accordance with the whole evolution of humanity. If we know the ground on which we stand, down to the formation of islands and peninsulas, then we shall realize what feelings must fill us if we mean to act in harmony with the evolution of humanity. Once upon a time, man was led down to the earth by the abnormal spirits of form, and united to the various parts of the earth's surface, and thus were the foundations laid for the development of the races. Then, however, we see the races intermingling more and more. We see the development of nations intervening in the evolution of the races, that is to say, the former arise out of the latter. We see the evolution of the nations intervening even in the evolution of the individual human beings. A great mystery is expressed when it is said who Plato was with respect to his outer being, with respect to his birth in human form. He was a man who grew up in the lineage of Solon, who belonged to the Ionian tribe, to the Greek nation, to the whole Caucasian race. If we understand that Plato was a descendant of Solon, an Ionian, a Greek, a Caucasian, this expresses, if we understand the law underlying it, a profound mystery. It expresses the mystery which shows us how the normal and abnormal spirits of form cooperate on the wide basis of the earth planet, those spirits whose greatest interest is to make man into an earth man. Herein is expressed how by this cooperative work the human kingdom is particularized, how then those other beings intervene of whom we have already spoken in describing the characteristics of the several peoples. Each individual in his own being participates in the cooperative working of all these higher beings, of these higher spirits. We do not understand the individual man if we do not see him in his whole evolution. He has become what he is through the cooperation of these beings. Through a Caucasian race once being created on our earth planet, through the mysterious cooperation of those spirits of form who have gone through the normal evolution, and those others who have gone through the abnormal evolution, the foundations were laid which made it possible for Plato to arise. And because we see the intervention of the abnormal and the normal archangels down to the angels, we see the means which were necessary to bring forth a Plato, whom we could meet with as a human being, having a human countenance, and possessing very definite attributes of reasoning, feeling, and willing. The folk or nation lies between the race and the individual. Thus we had to describe in general today the fundamental conditions leading to the development of race. In the next lecture, we will consider the growing up of peoples out of the races, the intervention of other spirits of the hierarchies, and will consider their intervention in the work of the spirits of form. The end of Lecture 4.